ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. With us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Michelle Bander. Here's what's coming your way. New faces, new voices. We look at the big changes on the Members of Parliament list. Then, from political drama to courtroom drama, we do a quick take on some major cases. Later, devastation across parts of KZN. Again. Also, are willing fathers unfairly excluded from their children's lives by the legal system? And Mexico welcomes its first female president, and we're ready to take notes. But first, as the ANC moves towards a government of national unity, the fight over policies begins. Whether it's giving back the land or nationalizing the Reserve Bank, or even scrapping BEE. Heck, some parties are even pushing for the scrapping of the Constitution altogether. So, what's a coalition government to do when policies clash?
Michelle, welcome back to the show. The elections are behind us. We are in the midst of fraught coalition talks. And I first want to know from you, how are you doing amid the madness?
Thank you for having me once again. I'm at a point where I just don't know what is what. I have a lot of anxiety. So I'm just hanging in there and just hoping for the best.
Now, things are still very much up in the air, as you've just said, regarding the various talks. What we do know now is that ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa announced late on Thursday that they are aiming for a government of national unity, or the GNU. Essentially, what that means is that all parties will be welcomed into the new coalition government in an effort to, quote, move South Africa forward, end quote. And this GNU also includes, if they're interested, the MK party. What do you make of this GNU decision? Are you more comfortable with that idea, or would you have preferred a more direct, it's an ANC-DA-EFF coalition? Coalition, or it's an ANC-DA-IFP coalition, or are you comfortable with the GNU approach?
I'm not sure about the GNU because it means there's many cooks. Will they be able to put their differences on the side for the greater interest? I'm not sure about that, but let's hope to see maybe something positive out of it. Maybe they would be able to put their differences aside as well and try to find a way forward that works for South Africa at large and not just for a few.
Yes, absolutely. And we also have a poll running on our social pages where we actually ask people, do you think that the various political parties have the maturity to set aside their differences? And right now, honestly, from what we've seen just in the past with coalitions on regional level, I'm more inclined to say no, or it's going to be very difficult to set aside their issues. So I'm wondering how mature our parties are to actually make things work.
Certainly, as I mentioned earlier, that they have different principles, and there's also some dysfunctionalities in the different parties or in the different structures that they need to sort out. But now if they're bringing it to one table, it's overwhelming. It's a lot.
The big question is, will they be able to mature enough in the next week? Because let's be honest, they need to sort out whatever needs to be sorted out by the 16th of June. There's not a lot of time to mature, but let's see how things unfold. Of course, South Africa has been here before. Daily Maverick's Ferial Hafiji recently had a very interesting interview with Rolf Meyer, the man who negotiated SA's transition from apartheid to democracy in the 90s. And he gave some clear advice on what needs to happen in order for this coalition government to succeed. He, as with Ramaphosa's comment last week, emphasized how the constitution must form the foundation of all decisions and conversations going forward. I also liked his comment on how parties can overcome their differences, because he said you need to start with the subjects and values you can find agreement on and then work from there to tackle the differences one by one.
I think that would be a good starting point, given that some of these policies that the different political parties want to enforce they're one way or the other related. The issues are similar. We live in one South Africa. So some of these issues, they don't exist in a vacuum. So if that is the baseline of starting negotiations, it would be better than trying to say, oh, in the ANC, we have these policies, or in the DA, we have those policies, or in the EFF, this is what. Let's start with common issues. How do we address those beyond the politics of the different political parties?
Brace yourselves. A new National Assembly is coming, and we're not just talking about the burnt-out parliamentary building in Cape Town. With several smaller parties clinching seats in Parliament, this invariably means that we'll be saying goodbye to a few well-known faces. Last week, we saw the final list of members of parliament being handed over to Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. And I think the biggest thing many took from the list, just from reading the comments online, is that the National Assembly will once again consist mostly of individuals aged between 40 and 70. So a lot of people have been complaining that parliament is once again too old. But one thing is clear, parliament will definitely look very, very different. Who are some of the MPs you're surprised to see either get dropped from the list or be brought in to serve on the National Assembly? Were there any surprising moves for you there?
Not necessarily surprising. Some of them we already knew from the sidelines that they might not be coming back. But some of them you're just like, okay, they're back. But I think one person in particular who I'm not surprised, but maybe I'm saddened by her not coming back, is Naledi Pandor. I think she's doing an extremely good job wherever she's placed. She does her work. So yeah, for her not to come back, I'm just like a little sad, but hopefully whoever replaces her is someone who's able to, you know, work and less talk.
Granted, she did confirm earlier in the year that she had no plans on returning to public office after the elections. So chances are we weren't going to see her return to parliament in any case, but definitely she has done some amazing work as the Minister of Education. And then we also saw her at DIRCO with the Department of International Relations, where she's also done some fantastic work. We've recently seen just how well she's done just on the Israel-Gaza matter. So yeah, absolutely, I agree with you. It's going to be very sad not to have Naledi Pandor back in the National Assembly. But the biggest exclusion that I think a lot of South Africans might be celebrating, either secretly or very openly, is, of course, Police Minister Bheki Cele. I think it's no secret South Africans had little faith in him, so I think many are happy to see him go. So that was, for me, one of the bigger exclusions that we saw. And then, of course, we have Thandi Modise, the current defense minister, who's also being left behind. So some really big portfolios are about to see some really, really big changes. For me, in terms of the other parties that I've been keeping an eye on, we'll, of course, have Patricia de Lille back. She will be the sole representative for the Good Party. And it's going to be interesting to see what she does, because she's quite a senior amongst everyone. So I'm interested to see what she brings with her single seat. And then another one that I kind of want to get your thoughts on is Action SA. We'll also definitely not see Mr. Fixit, Herman Mashaba. And I think a lot of voters are quite upset with Action SA in general, just because they've pulled out of the multi-party charter and now Mashaba won't be appearing in parliament. So many people are saying, well, we based our vote on Mashaba and now he's nowhere to be found. He's not featuring anywhere. So what was the point? So what are your thoughts on Action SA?
I think Action SA, having launched in the time of COVID, has done fairly well as a party, because they've only contested the local elections in 2021, and this is their first national and provincial election. They've been very vocal on the issues of Hammanskraal, water issues and stuff like that, which have been good. We should give them a bit of grace. But obviously everyone was basing everything on Mashaba, which is sad to see that he won't be part of that. At least they have one representative in parliament.
Definitely. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do more, I guess, on a provincial and regional level. But another biggie for me is the return of Musi Maimane, of course, now under Bosa. He's very experienced. Parliament is certainly nothing new to him. And then we also have the Patriotic Alliance, of course, and with the very vocal Gayton McKenzie. And by his side, which I think surprised many, will be eight other Patriotic Alliance MPs. So yeah, I think the days of Bosa boring parliament are officially over.
Certainly, we still have to brace ourselves for more drama and just more personality.
While the MK party battles it out in court over who's the true leader of the party, a few other major court cases also took place this past week. First up, we had convicted rapist and murderer and prison escapee Thabo Bester calling for the death penalty so he can... well, we're not entirely sure what he wants. Then, in a surprise arrest, former Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture, Zizi Kodwa, made his first appearance on corruption charges. And also on the political front, former National Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula was the only accused left standing after her co-accused was let off the hook.
Last week was also a dramatic time on the judicial front with several big court cases happening. I want to move our focus to the Oscar-worthy performance that we saw from convicted murderer and rapist Thabo Bester. I mean, did you see that? I was speechless while I was watching it. It was just a bizarre moment.
I don't understand his entitlement because he's been given plenty of opportunities in his case. Thinking about other cases that have dragged on for years, for instance, the Senzo Meyiwa case, he has been given attention and his case is moving fairly faster than any other case. For him to even say that his rights are being infringed and he wants a fair trial and him just wanting to speak and just be on the spotlight again.
Yeah, he's an absolute narcissist, really, when you look at it. And I think it's a delay tactic because... again, he has no legal counsel, but I also think that he just cannot help himself. If you look at similar people who'd kind of run these scams and manipulate people, they just, a lot of the times, just cannot help themselves. They either make themselves the victim or they have to turn the spotlight onto them or they have to make themselves seem like this larger than life character. So I think it's a lot of different things, but it's strange to see it unfold right before our eyes. Of course, he claims that he is being denied access to legal counsel and that he hasn't had any human contact except for the guards within the prison. And he also complained about the media's portrayal of him. But I'm so happy to see that the judge basically said, you know what, Mr. Bester, take your complaints to the relevant authorities, sort out your legal counsel, and let's just get on with it. But another case that we saw was Zizi Kodwa making his first appearance in court on corruption charges. This after the now resigned Sport, Arts and Culture Minister was linked to an alleged bribe of 1.6 million rands to facilitate a 400 million plus IT contract for EOH within the city of Joburg. And finally, we also had former Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula returning to court in her ongoing corruption and money laundering case. This, of course, after she allegedly solicited a bribe of over 2 million rands from a service provider in 2016 when she was still the Minister of Defense. Now, all of that brings me to this question. Are we finally seeing some movement on the state capture front now that the ANC's hold on power has been shaken so dramatically? Do you think that is what we're seeing right now?
I think that's what we're seeing right now, but also it's a reflection of SA's corruption emergency. I mean, sitting where I'm sitting, because it's a coalition government, we're still going to see more of this. And it doesn't really reflect very well on the ANC because all of these guys who have been nabbed at this point are ANC members and they're former ministers. They've sat in parliament. And what does it say about the rest?
It's become an annual occurrence. Communities of KwaZulu-Natal left destitute following intense storms. While residents of Tongaat and other areas are battling to rebuild their homes and come to terms with the loss of loved ones, we cannot help but wonder whether government could do more to mitigate the impacts of climate change.
Let's move on to KZN, and it's been a devastating week in the province with massive storms. We had at least two tornadoes, as confirmed by the South African Weather Service, touching down in Utrecht and Tongaat. Sadly, the Tonga tornado caused serious damage and led to multiple fatalities. At the time of this recording, I think the death toll following the storm stood at 11. You know, as I was following the developments, I felt like just this KZN picks itself up from one natural disaster, another one hits, and then they have to rebuild again. And it just never ends. And I just really feel for the people of KZN at this point.
Certainly. I was thinking about it. It's like we've had those repeated occurrences of floods. At least in the last 3 years, it's every year they repeat themselves. They claim lives. They destroy infrastructure. I'm asking myself, is it climate change or does the state of the infrastructure play a role in the impact of these floods? Because it's just a lot. It has happened so much. Some of the parts that have been affected have not been refurbished. I'm just here thinking to myself, have we not also as a country not found a way to try and combat the situation? Because to me, it comes across as if we are still reactive, but there's no preventative measures to say, okay, let's prevent this from having a greater impact on the rest of KZN. Because when you think about it, almost every other road in KZN is still affected by the previous flood and has not been fixed. And then there's another flood. What are we doing? How do we deal with such instances? As we have seen that Gift of the Givers is always at the front of it, trying to provide a lifeline for people who have been affected by the floods. But what is the government doing about it?
And I just want to, before we carry on, I just want to say, once again, Gift of the Givers is doing the work and showing government exactly how it should be done when it comes to supporting disaster-struck communities. I do feel like these extreme weather events are on the increase, but I also remember a couple of years back when we covered the KZN floods, we spoke to some experts there because you've just raised the idea of, is it infrastructure as well? And some of them told us that yes, it is, because of inadequate waste management, that it clogs up the water systems and the rivers. So the natural flow of water is gravely impacted by all of this waste buildup, that it causes rivers to really break their banks more than they actually should. So it's definitely an infrastructure issue as well.
See this as your reminder that this coming Sunday is Father's Day. But far too many dads across South Africa are facing an uphill battle when it comes to being part of their children's lives. This despite every intention to be loving, caring fathers who want to play an active role in their children's upbringing.
Now, this coming Sunday is Father's Day and Youth Day, and you're currently working on a really important article regarding parental alienation, and more specifically, the alienation of fathers. I know there are so many good, caring fathers who are desperate to have their stories told. They've reached out to us a lot over the years. But apart from it being Father's Day, what inspired you to pursue this very important topic?
You know, I've been working on this story for like 6 months. I was watching TV and I saw this show. It's called Bab Geld. And I'm thinking to myself, I see a lot of mothers going on that show saying, oh, my baby daddy is not paying maintenance. You're not taking care of the child. The child doesn't have shoes. The child this and that. And then I sat and thought to myself, but why are we not echoing the voices of fathers who face a similar issue of not having access to their own kids? When it comes to fathers, there's silence or there's some undertone biasness that the father is treated differently, even in the courts. So it bothered me a lot that as a society saying we are in a transformation era, are we really transforming?
And it's also that idea of we're essentially raising a fatherless generation.
Yes.
And this is why this topic is so important, because a lot of the times it's not because it's a loser dad who just doesn't want to be present and responsible. A lot of the times they are being kept away from their children through various ways by the mothers. I was wondering, considering that you've been working on this for 6 months, without giving away too much, because obviously we want people to go and read your article, but what were some of your findings, particularly within the South African context, while researching this topic?
Like I've mentioned earlier, that I've picked up a lot of biasness when it comes to that particular issue. It's an untold story. When you reach out to a father, they have a lot to say. They're like, I want to be there for my child, but I'm not afforded the opportunity to be there because maybe sometimes I'm not working. I can't contribute financially, but I know how to love a child. At some point, the other father said to me at court when I was fighting to have access to my child, I was asked if I had breasts to breastfeed the child.
And we often see in the courts, they tend to favor the mother. I've seen it a few times where the dads really have to jump through hoops just to care for their children. And these are fathers who want to care for their children and desperately so. So it's very sad to see children being robbed of the opportunity to be well cared for by a caring parent, regardless of whether it's the mother or the father.
Certainly, because it has its own impacts. We have a fatherless nation where they tell you we have this percentage of number of fathers who are not present in their child's life. I was speaking to a social worker who spoke to the aspect of how fatherlessness affects the child and no one really cares about it, and that it is the child's right to actually have both parents play a role in their life.
Now, if you want to know more, keep an eye on the Daily Maverick website for Michelle's feature. And she's also keeping a close eye on the Kampepe Commission of Inquiry into the deadly Usindiso building fire. So also look out for those updates.
Come the 1st of October, Mexico will have a new president, and her name is Claudia Sheinbaum. Yes, for the first time in Mexico's 200-year history, a woman will be leading the country. But with extreme poverty rates remaining high, having one of the highest homicide rates in the world, and the number of citizens unable to access healthcare having doubled, the challenges faced by the people of Mexico are similar to ours. So, could we learn a few lessons from the country's incoming president?
Now, let's quickly move to international news, and this relates wonderfully to today's discussion on the transition of power. Mexico elected its first female president last week. Her name is Claudia Sheinbaum, and she's the former Mexico mayor and also a climate scientist. And what I like is that she's been described as, quote, less combative and more data-driven in her approach to addressing inequality and Mexico's high levels of violence. Now, I think it will be interesting to keep an eye on her leadership because Mexico deals with a lot of issues that are very similar to ours. So it's going to be very interesting to see what she does to address those issues. Maybe we can learn a few lessons from her.
Maybe we can. I mean, for many years, most countries have been ruled by men. At some point, we need women at the forefront. And as a transforming world, maybe when a woman is upfront, there are certain changes we're going to see, because I see that Claudia also wants to tackle issues relating to gender-based violence and just violence at large. Maybe it's something that we need to learn from Mexico and South Africa, because we also have high levels of gender-based violence in the country.
And as we've seen in Africa as well, and some parts of Asia where women take up leadership roles, we have seen some really positive change. We've seen that governments that are led by women tend to take a more calm approach in dealing with issues instead of wanting to go all out guns blazing. It's more about finding a real practical solution to a problem. Well, that's all we have time for today, Michelle. Thanks as always for joining Carte Blanche. Always lovely chatting to you, and all the best for the week ahead. I know it's going to be a rough one for us all, and just keep warm as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I'll surely keep warm and brave myself for the week.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.